Now we're holding on Ayin Zayin Amud Beis, about the middle of the wide lines. The line begins Achzik. So what are we? 12 lines from the bottom. We learned yesterday the story of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, of how he used to go together with Balei Rasan, the people who suffer from the terrible contagious disease Rasan, and learn Torah with them. And when he passed away, we said that he was able to outwit the Malchamavis and get into Gan Eden alive. So now the Gemara tells a similar story about one of the other Chacham. Rav Chanina bar Papa Shushvine Hava. Rav Chanina bar Papa was his friend. So Rashi explains he was friendly with the Malchamavis. He'd be able to talk to the Malacham Avis on an equal level and be able to get what he wants out of him. On the other hand, the Iyun Yaakov on En Yaakov says that maybe in fact Shushvine means he was Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi's friend and therefore he was of the same caliber as him. When he was about to pass away, the Beis Din Shamayla told the Malach HaMavis, go do what he wants first, give him his last wish. So he went to Rav Chanina bar Papa and appeared to him, and Rav Chanina bar Papa realized that means his time is up. But Rav Chanina bar Papa asked him, Shavki Tzlosin Yoim, leave me alone for 30 days. Let me have an extra 30 days. Ada Neder Tamudoy, until I review all of my learning. Because the Chachamim say, Ashri Misha Bolakan, the Talmudei Biyodei. Happy is the person, fortunate is the person who comes here to Gan Eden, with his learning, with his Talmud in his hand, meaning that he reviewed it and knows it well. So the same way, I want to have one last chance to review my learning before you take my neshama and take me to Gan Eden. So the Malach HaMavis left him alone. After 30 days, the Malach HaMavis came and reappeared to him. Omalei, he says again, so now, Rav Chanina bar Papa says, Achli li duchtoi, show me my place in Gan Eden, like Rav Yeshua ben Levi had done. Omalei l'chaye, so the Malach HaMavis says, okay. Omalei habli sakinach, and Rav Chanina bar Papa says, like Rav Yeshua ben Levi before him, give me your knife, dumam of eses li ba'urcha, because you might otherwise threaten with me with it on the road. Omalei, now the Malach HaMavis was a little smarter from last time. He says, Kechabrach bois amebadli, were you trying to play the same trick on me that your friend did, and you're going to take away the knife, and then you're going to leap into Gan Eden alive like he did? The reason why, Rabbi Yeshua, in other words, essentially, how is Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi able to get away with it, is because if the Malach HaMavis still had his sword with him, then he would have been able to physically prevent Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi from getting into Gan Eden alive. But he didn't have it, therefore Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi was able to outsmart him. But now he says, I'm smarter, I'm not gonna fall for that trick again. Omalei, sort of Chanina bar Papa says, and if I do, so what? I see Sefer Torah of a Chazi. You want, bring a Sefer Torah and see. Mi ikamidi deksibbe deloi kiyamtia. Is there anything written in the Torah that I haven't fulfilled? So yes, maybe I am of the caliber to go into Gan Eden alive. Omalei, but the Malach HaMavis says to him, fine, you did keep everything in the Torah. But mi ikharches bebalei rasan ve'iaskes b'Torah. Did you sit together with Balei Rasan and learn Torah like Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi did? So he had that extra schus that he worked even with the Balei Rasan and didn't worry about the contagion and anything and sat and learned Torah with them. You don't have that schus. So therefore, you may be on a very high level, high enough to be talking one-on-one with the Malach HaMavis and be giving your last wish, but to go into Gan Eden alive, you're not of that caliber. By the way, I forgot to mention yesterday, actually, the Medrash, in Ovis of Nosson, I think it is, that lists 9 people that went into Gan Eden alive, and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, of course, is one of them. But Rabbi Chanina bar Papa is not. So the Gemara says, Va'afilu hochi, even so, he was on such a high level, ki noch nafshe, when Rabbi Chanina bar Papa passed away, ifsikle amudu denura ben didei la'alma, a pillar of fire stood there and separated between him and everybody else. Which means, in other words, it was meant to represent Minashamayim that nobody else is worthy of even approaching him. So, like, there's a pillar of fire over there. Nobody else is able to come anywhere near him. We had back on Daf Yud Zayin, actually, that something similar, where it said over there about Rabbi Shmuel Bar Yitzchak, he used to dance in front of a kala with three branches of hadassim, and Rabbi Zeira criticized him for that and said it's beneath the dignity of a Talmud Chacham. But then when he passed away, there was this pillar of fire, and then everybody realized that Ahanyele Shutisa Lasava and Shtuse Lasava and whatever, that his way of doing things, this ostensible Shtus of his, in fact brought him to a tremendously high level. So here, similar to Rav Chanina Bar Papa, it showed that he was on an extremely high level. Ogmiri, because in fact we have the Kabbalah, the Lai Masak, Amudjanura, Elalachad Bedara, Evitrain Bedara. In fact, we have the Kabbalah, that such a thing, a pillar of fire like that appears for only one special person in a generation, or at most two people in a generation. So therefore it shows how high Rav Chanina Bar Papa was. Well, the result was, the fact is, they still need to bury him. Krav legabei Rav Alexandri. So Rav Alexandri went over as close as he could get to the pillar of fire. Omar, and he says to Rav Chanina Bar Papa, we need the pillar of fire to move. You need to ask Hashem to move it. Do that. Allow the pillar of fire to move for the covered of the Chachamim, so we can get close to you. Loy Ashkach, but he didn't pay attention, and the pillar of fire still remained. He said, do it for the covered of your father. In other words, Rabbi Alexandri is saying, if your father was still alive, this Amuda Denura would actually be separating you from him as well. So do at least for the covet of him that he's not alive anymore, the Pashtus, but his neshama should be able to approach yours. Still Layashka, still Rav Chanina Bar Papa didn't pay attention to that. Finally, Rav Alexandri said, "Ase b'shvo kvod atzmacha, do it for your own covet, so we can get close and actually bury you. Otherwise, how are we going to be able to bury you?" It's stalak, and then the pillar of fire went away. So Amar Abaya, says, so in that case, what was the point of the pillar of fire? Who was it trying to exclude? It was meant to exclude from Rav Chanina Bar Papa's company anybody who had not kept even one letter of the Torah. Sometimes you have, Marashal points out, you have some halachas that we learn from one single letter in the Torah. So you can say that when a person kept every single mitzvah and every single halacha, then it can be said on him that he kept every letter in the Torah. So the pillar of fire was meant to exclude anybody who's not on that level. We said before, he had said to the Malacham Lavis, is there anything in the Torah that I haven't fulfilled? So therefore, anybody who's not of that caliber couldn't come close. So, Rav Adav Amasna says to Abaya, in that case also, in that case, that would have been meant to exclude you as well. After all, you, Abaya, are not doing the mitzvah of Micah. You have a roof and you don't have a fence around it, like the Torah says. So, in other words, he was using this opportunity to give Abaya a little musa. You've been careless with that mitzvah. But the Gemara says, Valohi, actually it's not so. Mi have a haba. In fact, Abaya did have a mitzvah around his roof. But at that point, a wind had knocked it down. So therefore, Rav Adav Amasna thought that there had never been one up there to begin with. He didn't realize that, in fact, Abaya had put up one and it had just gotten knocked down. And Ben Yoyada points out that still, in a certain sense, Rav Adav Amasna is correct. Because a mitzvah that can be knocked down by a wind, he's telling Abaya, then you should have built it more strongly to begin with. I mean, I guess, you know, in Abaya's defense, we could say it was a hurricane or something. With that said, there are a couple of drushim, there are a couple of drusha type explanations of what Rav Adav Amasna meant. The Chassam Sofer talks about that we know from the Gemara in Yevamos that Abaya, we had earlier in our Masechta as well, that Abaya was not careful about the din of Katlonis, that you have a woman whose husband's passed away previously, and he went and married Choyma, we learned on Dasamachay of our Masechta, even though two husbands of hers beforehand had passed away, and there's a possibility that maybe already there's a Chazakah. So therefore, sort of Adav Amasna is hinting that to him by using the metaphor of a Micah. The point of a Micah is to prevent people from falling off your roof to preserve their lives, and he's telling Abaya you're not being careful with something involving that. And then there's a verse from the Ishbitzer that says that he's hinting to Abaya that the tzaddik of the generation, like you, is responsible for protecting the Hamoinam and working with them and bringing them up to a higher level Beruchnius and protecting them from troubles Beruchnius, and he says you're kind of falling down on the job. So the Gemara finishes off. Amar Rav Chanina, mipnei ma'en balei rasam b'bavel. Now we talked about this rasam disease. Why is it Rav Chanina says that you don't find it in bavel? The reason is mipnei she'ochlin trodin v'shosin sheicho shal hizn. Because in bavel they regularly eat trodin, which are beets or spinach or some related vegetable like that, which is healthy for you, and they drink beer. And then they drink beer that has hops in it that grow on hizmi. A hizmi is a type of thorn bush that grows on it, a parasitic plant which they use in making beer. So they drink that kind of beer in Bavel, and that mitrodin keeps them healthy so that they're not susceptible to rasam. And Omer Rabbi Yechanan, they ma'in mitzeroyim the Bavel. Rabbi Yechanan says in this connection, why are there no mitzeroyim in Bavel? Where mitzeroyim doesn't necessarily mean only saras of the Torah. It could include other kinds of skin diseases as well. Anyway, the reason is, he says, mepesha ochlin trodin, v'shosin shecher, again, because they eat beets, and they drink beer, unlike in Eretz Yisrael, where they mostly drank wine. V'roichtin, they make pros, and they bathe in the pros river, which the water of that is good for you, and therefore they're less susceptible to these kinds of things. The next parak now, the eighth parak, we're going to be dealing with, so we've talked here and there in the Masechta about where a woman has nichsim alug. She has property that she brought into the marriage after she and her husband were married. We have nichsit son barzel, which are written into the ksuba, and the husband takes full responsibility for them. He's entitled to the keren of them. He uses the actual item itself. And just at the end, if he dies or he divorces her, then he has to give her back the actual thing and reimburse her for any losses or whatever. And then you have nichsim alug, where to begin with, the husband doesn't actually own them, but he's entitled to payrus of them. And nichsim alug will be in general where she didn't have them at the time of the marriage, she gets them afterwards. So now we're going to talk in this parak about dinim involving that. The Mishnah says, Ha'isha should not flow in nechasim ad shalat isaris. If a woman came into possession of nechasim before her erusin. So Rashi says that it means that afterwards, you're asking something? So Rashi says it means that this is she acquired these nechasim before her erusin, and then afterwards she was nisaris, afterwards she was nisadish, and the question is going to be, what rights, if any, does the husband have over these nechasim? Tosfos discusses that maybe not necessarily. We're talking about over here that later on she got married, not just Avison. Anyway, Moedim Beshama Basilo from Moicheres Venesenes Vakayim. Now both Beshama and Basilo, who further on in the Mishnah are going to argue about some other cases, in this particular case, when she got the Nechasim before the Erusin, and now it's during, according to Rashi, it's still during the Erusin, according to Tosfos, it's even after the marriage, even after they got fully married, both Beshama and Basilo agree, Shemecheres Venesenes, she can sell or give whatever of the Nechasim she wants, Vakayim, and that sale or that gift will stand. We don't say, in other words, that the husband has rights to pay us of these nechasim, given that she got them before the erusin. So again, Rashi would say that this means specifically if it's now during the erusin, as opposed to Rashi says if she got married, then the dinim are different, then we're going to talk about later in the Mishnah. And Tosfos says that no, it can mean even if she got married. Later on, when we talk about the difference between before and after she got married, we're talking about nechasim that she acquired while she was in erusin. So in other words, in short, like this. Rashi and Tosfos are saying like this. If she got nechasim before her erusin, now she's an arusa, then Rashi and Tosfos both agree that the Mishnah means that she can sell and gift whatever she wants. Now, if instead she got it before she was an arusa, now she's not only gone through the erusin but also the nisuin, Rashi will hold that our Mishnah is not saying already that she can just sell it freely, because now it's nichsim alug and her husband has certain rights over it. And Tosfos says that no, the Mishnah means even if she got married already, she can still do whatever she wants with it, because she owned it even before the erusin, and it was not written into the ksuba as nichsit zon barza, so therefore it doesn't become nichsim alug either.
So the only time that it actually becomes most fully.
So Nefesh Malog would be only if she got them after the Eris.
That's true.
Right. So now, Mishinis, not law Mishinis Arisa, what if she gets these Nechasim after the Erisin? So here's where you have a Machorus. Bet Shammai Omim Timker, Bet Shammai says she's allowed to sell them, because after all, the Nisuin hasn't happened yet, and her husband doesn't have rights to the Paris until, so while she's in Arusa, she can still sell it. Once she gets married, then no, then it's going to become Nechasim Malog. But while she's still in Arusa, then she can sell it, says Bet Shammai. Or Bet Hillel, I mean, Loin Timker, Bet Hillel says that she cannot. But they both do agree that if she did, then b'dieved, it is good. An interesting point, by the way, the choice for Yom Tov says, why the expression, later on Amud Beis, Rashi explains, it's not so much that she's not allowed to sell them, according to Beis Hillel, but rather that if a prospective buyer comes to Beis Din to ask whether he should buy them, Beis Din will tell them no. So the Tosfos Yom Tov makes an interesting point. He says, because after all, she has the option to not go through with the marriage. She can say, okay, you were Makadish me, my chosin, but I don't feel like going through with the marriage. Like, give me a get and let's have it over with. On the other, so therefore she has more of an ability to sell. It's really more on the buyer that the buyer shouldn't be buying it without, unless Beis Din tells him to go ahead.
I don't think we can't force him to give a get.
But the point is, in other words, she has the ability, even let's say, to delay the marriage. I mean, you know, we learned before, for example, that after 12 months, the expectation is the marriage is good. Is she entitled to food or whatever? Yeah, but the fact remains that she could continue delaying it. So therefore, in that sense, the fact that there was going to be a marriage is really not so certain yet. That's what the choice was young to say. Anyway, so again, Ms. Shammai says she could sell it. Ms. Hillel says that not.
The actual money that she gets, does it go to him automatically?
So the actual money that she gets, so if it's not Nechasim Malog, then it would mean the pashtus that she can keep it. On the other hand, she's going to be bringing it as an asset into the marriage, so then what's going to happen with that money? It might become Nechasim Malog, it might become Nechasim Tzayin Barzal, that's something else. So again, the Shammai says she could sell, the Hillel says she shouldn't, but they both agree that the Diyavet it is good. Amr of Yehuda, Amru Chachamim Lifnei Ram Gamliel. So Rav Yehuda says that the Chachamim pointed out to Ram Gamliel, is this right? Hoyo v'zocha be'isha. Once the husband is zoicha in the woman, she is after all his arusa, and he doesn't have certain rights over her yet, as we're going to say in a few days, but still they are to a certain extent considered husband and wife. Lo yizke v'nechosim. Shouldn't he have schus over the nechosim as well? Why is Beis Hillel saying? So actually, we're going to learn in the Gemara what Rabbi Yehuda is referring to, but let's take it on a simple level. In other words, that he's saying. So the Gemara is going to say, is he talking about the fact that this Shammai says Lachatzchila he could sell, or the fact that this Hillel says that the Diyavit it's valid? So we'll get back to that in the Gemara. But anyway, why should that be? Given that after all, she is his wife at this point. So Rav Gamliel answers the Chachamim, Al Chadoshim and Uboshim, we're embarrassed enough about the new ones. In other words, even when she gets property after she's married, we're a little embarrassed to say, we don't understand why the Chachamim would say, as we're going to say later in the Mishnah, that the husband has the right to undo the sale at that point. Fine, he's entitled to payers, but to the extent that should make him be able to undo the sale, why should that be? So we have a hard enough time understanding that. And you want to put on us the old ones? You want to ask the chosim that are old that she got even before the nisuin? You want to say the husband should have the right to undo the sale? We can't say that. Continues the Mishnah. Nafla mishum nisis. What happens now if she gets the chosim after she got married? So now both the Shammai and the Hillel agree that if she sells or if she gives any of it away, that the husband can take away from the buyers, because again, he's considered, so to speak, the first buyer. So therefore, like, his rights come ahead of theirs. Different Rishonim talk about, does that mean that he wouldn't even have to reimburse the buyer the money? The Rambam says, if the money still exists, then he has to reimburse the guy, but otherwise, if the money's already been spent, then he doesn't owe it back. Different other Mephoshim talk about different other Rishonim talk about ins and outs of it. One thing, I think the Rivosh it is, points out that, listen, after all, the guy bought it to begin with at a discount because, after all, it wasn't certain that he was going to be able to keep it, given that it's Nechasim Malog, given that eventually, if she dies first, then it's going to become part of the husband's estate, he's going to yaush in it, etc. So therefore, if he loses his money, fine, you know, he took his risk.
the money was spent, not that was
if the money was spent, then the Rambam right.
Because she has the money.
Right. But the point is, if the money was spent, so she sold it, and now the money's been spent, so the Rambam passed, and in that case, the husband doesn't have to reimburse. Nobody has to reimburse the buyer. But if the money still exists, then yeah. Anyway, actually, nisus for nisus. Now, what happens in another case? What happens if she got the property before she was married, and now she's married? So now Rashi explains again. And in the first half of the Mishnah, we were talking about before and after Eirusin, and now we're dealing with after. Now we're dealing with after she was married, after Chuppah. So again, Tosfos earlier said that up till now we may have been talking about certain cases where it was after the marriage as well. So now we're talking about more specifically when she got in the chasm, before she got married, whether before the Erisin or whether during the Erisin, and now she's married. So now Rav Gamliel Omer Machar V'Nos Nakayim. So now Rav Gamliel says that if she sells property or gives property of that, then it's fine. Then the sale is valid and the husband can't undo it. So again, Omer Rav Chanina ben Akavya. So Rav Chanina ben Akavya says, similar to Rav Yehuda, although the Gemara is going to point out these are two different opinions, otherwise it wouldn't repeat it in the Mishnah. But so we'll see in the Gemara exactly what they're arguing about. But anyway, Rav Chanina ben Akavya says, Omer Lifnei Rav Gamliel. The Chachamim said in front of Rav Gamliel, the same logic as before. However, Zocha Be'isha Lo Yizkim and Chasin. Once he's Zoycha and the wife, and once he married her already, before we were talking about only Erisin, now we're talking about she's fully his wife. Shouldn't he get the nechassim as well? Shouldn't he have the ability to undo the sale? Because after all, she sold it after she was married. She only acquired it before she was married. And again, Omalahem al Chadoshim and Uboshim, and Ramamil says to them, we're already embarrassed about the new ones. We have a hard enough time understanding if she gets nechassim after she gets married and sells them after she's married, why we would say, as Mishnah said earlier, that a Baal Motzi Miyad al-Kofas, Elashatim Gagulon and Yishonim, and you're rolling onto us the old ones. In other words, you want to say that the same din should apply to ones that she acquired even before the Nisuin, and we're not going to do that. So we'll see in the Gemara again. So basically, Rabbi Yehuda is applying that statement of the Chachamim to property that she got, that she sold during the Erusin, and Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel is referring that discussion to property that she got during the Erusin and sold after the Nisuin. The Mishnah continues. Rav Shimon cholek ben nechassim l'nechassim. Rav Shimon says there's a distinction between different kinds of nechassim. Nechassim are you doing labal? If they're nechassim that the husband knew about, loy timker, then she shouldn't sell them. The imachor benosna bottle. If she does sell or give it, then that's bottle because then the husband expected to get payers from them. In fact, we showed him explain, given that, why does the husband get payers in the first place? We learned earlier in the Masechta because in case she gets captured by goyim, in case she gets captured or taken prisoner or whatever, then the husband has a responsibility to pay money to ransom her. So therefore, in return for that, the Chacham gave him payers. So therefore, only when it's Nechassim that he knows about is he expecting to get payers from. So therefore, on that basis, we want to give him those payers in order to give him an incentive to ransom her. But if he doesn't know about them, so he continues, and you're doing labal, if these are nechassim that the husband didn't know about, loy timko, she still shouldn't sell them, be machar v'nos nekayim, but if she did sell them or give them, then it's valid because the husband didn't know about them anyway, and therefore they don't really factor into his consideration of ransoming his wife. Now, the Rosh talks about over here, not everybody agrees with this, but the Rosh talks about there can be two different cases. There can be where he knew about them, or where there can be where he actually knew that they exist, or where he expected, he knows that she doesn't have them yet, but he expects that they're going to come to her. He knows, for example, that they're property that belongs, let's say, to her father, and that she has no brothers, and therefore that she's eventually in line to Yarshin or something like that.
The Bundon sale we hit also, you have to let the money go to the husband. Because
so again, what happens with the money afterwards is a separate question. Then we could say that becomes part of Nichsum Alur. But right now we're talking about property itself. Does the husband have the right to take back the property to say, I'm entitled to pay this from this property, therefore I want the property back? That was, so far we had the various distinctions in the mission.
Right. Can we say also the reason why he has the right to do that because he's giving her parnasa, he's feeding her?
So it's not so much parnasa. Parnasa, the fact that he's feeding her, we said in return for that she gives him maisi adela. The fact that he's entitled to pay us from Nichsum Alur in return for that is if she's captured, then he has to. So being captured is a bit of a rare situation, which also factors into this, right? Okay. So the Gemara says Maishna Reisha, the white pligi, or Maishna Sefer de pligi. Why is it in the Reisha when she got this property before the Erusin. Now she's in Arusa. We're saying that therefore the husband has no rights, and therefore both Bishama and Yisrael agree that she can sell, and that she can sell freely. Umayishna Sefer Depligi, why is it in the Sefer if she got the Nechasim after the Erusin? The fact is, we're talking about she's still doing the Erusin, she sold it. Why only in that case of Bishama and Yisrael argue? So the Gemara says, Ami Dvei Rav Yanai, they said in the Yeshiva of Rav Yanai, the difference is like this. Reisha Bishusa Naflu, because in the Reisha, in the very first case of the Mishnah, when she got this property before even the Erusin, then it was in her schus, not schus in the usual sense. We mean as far as mitzvahs, but meaning, in other words, that her husband had no rights over her yet. She wasn't even arusa. She was independent. Therefore, the logic is that the husband has no right later on, even though now she's in Arusa when she's selling it, or according to Tosfos, maybe even in Asua and she's selling it, the husband can't say, I have rights over it, because the fact is she got it before he ever had any rights, before he and she ever had any relationship.
This is a matter of, when I was speaking to you, she's a Katana,
she's a Katana, she can't sell anyhow. The Pashas we're talking about when she's a Naira, or we have to be talking about either when she's a Naira or a Begeris, or we'd have to be talking about when, for whatever reason, she's out of her father's Rishus. Sefer Bishusay Nafu, as opposed to in the next case where she got it during the Erusin, then already it's in his, then already he had certain schusim over her. She's already his Arusa. So therefore, so now that's where Beth Shammah and the Sivil are going to be arguing. So he already has a certain ownership over the property. So the Gemara asks, "Im bishusay nafsu ki machar v'nosna ma'akayim." Okay, in that case, then why is it that if she sells, then it's good? According to Beth Sivil, we're saying she shouldn't sell because of that, but the d'evet she did, it's valid. Why? By that logic, if it was bishusay nafsu, then it should be the same thing as if she got it after she got married. Ella, no, we have to say it a little differently. Reisha vaday b'schus anafu. In the Reisha, for sure, it's in her schus, because of course, before the Erusin even, she and he have no relationship at all. Sefer emor b'schusa, emor b'schusay. When it comes to the Sefer, though, we have a suffix. The Erusin makes a kind of suffix nisurin. They might end up getting married. They might not. Like we said before, it is possible for her to keep on delaying the marriage. It's even possible they may decide not to go through with it. We may have, as we learned in the previous Perek, Mumim or other things that he discovers about her, etc., and therefore the marriage never happens. So therefore it's a kind of suffix. So Ema Bishusa, therefore the Hatchila Lo Timko, therefore the Hatchila, she shouldn't be selling it in Macher Nos Mekayim, but if she does, then B'dieved Besilla is going to say that it's valid. Next, we said in the Mishnah, Amr Rabbi Yehuda, Amru Lifnei Rabbi Gamliel. Now, Rabbi Yehuda says the Chachamim argued as follows in front of Rabbi Gamliel. They said, once he was Zoicha in the woman, shouldn't he also be Zoicha in the Nechasim? So, Ibayilahu, Rabbi Yehuda al Hatchila oy Adiyevid. Is Rabbi Yehuda referring to the case of Hatchila? And the question is, why is this Shammai saying that she can sell in that case even Hatchila? Basil, but in other words, the Chacham, according to that way of looking at it, the Chacham is saying, Basil, we understand. Given the suffix we just said, or actually we're talking about a different case where she got it in the Chosim after the Erusin, then, so it's not quite the same suffix, but it is kind of, because during the Erusin she got the property, so therefore Basil could say that we're not sure, and therefore the Chila she shouldn't sell, but B'dievet if she did, then fine. But the question is, in that case, why would this Shammai say she could do it on Chila? That's one way of understanding the Chachamim's question to Rav Gamliel. The other way of understanding the question is they're asking why in the case of the Dievid, why is the Sivil allowing the sale to stand when, after all, we should say the husband maybe has rights over it and maybe he should have the right to take it away. That's according to Rashi. Tosfos discusses at some length and says maybe not. For one thing, why would we think that the Chachamim are asking according to Bishamai's opinion? The fact is, we know that Allah is not like Bishamai against the Sivil almost ever. So rather, Tosfos explains that the Hatchila and the Dievid would really be we're talking about the Reisha versus the Sefer of the Mishnah, the case of before the Erusin, where if she sells, that we say that Mecheres v'Nesenes v'Kayim versus Mishnes Arusa, where we're saying that she shouldn't. So according to Tosfos, the question would be on that. Which are the Chachamim referring to? So Toshma, the Gemara says, let's prove the Tanya. Amr of Yehuda, Amru lifnei Rav Gamliel, Hoyo v'zu ishtoi v'zu ishtoi. They said to Rav Gamliel, the Chachamim, since the Nesua is his wife and the Arusa is also his wife, Zumrich or Batel. Well, if she sells it after she gets married, then we said in the Mishnah, if she gets property after she's Nesua and sells it when she's Nesua, then the husband can undo the sale and take it back from the buyers. So therefore, the Chachamim are arguing to Rav Gamliel that after all, Arusa is his wife to a certain extent as well. Therefore, the same rule should apply. And now, and Rav Gamliel answers them as he did in the Mishnah, Allah Chadosh Manu Boshim, El Shatim Gagul Alain Asayishonim, we're embarrassed enough to understand why even in the case of property that she got as an Nesua, why the husband should be able to undo that. Why are you even putting on us the Yeshonim and then saying that he should even have the right to undo it in an earlier stage during the Erusin? So Shmamina di Eved Kamar. So we see from that clearly that Rabbi Yehuda is saying that the discussion was about the Dievid case. So according to Rashi, in other words, the question was not according to Bais Shammai's opinion, it was according to Bais Hillel's opinion. Why is it b'dieved if she sells that it's valid? The Chachamim are arguing that it shouldn't be valid. And Rav Gamliel is telling them, we have a hard enough time understanding why when she's married, why when she's married, the husband would have the right to undo the sale. And you want to tell us even in the case when Bais Hillel allows it b'dieved, you want to say it shouldn't be allowed? We can't do that. According to Tosfos, it's rather that the question is not on the ratio of the Mishnah, the case where she got in the chosen before she was in Arusa, but rather the safer when she's in a sewer. Or after the Avosin. Yeah. Okay. So Shmamina, good. So that proves that's what Rabbi Yehuda's quotation of the discussion between the Ramiel and the Chachamim is referring to that case. Shmamina literally means you can hear from it. So in other words, we can prove from that, that Rashi points out in a number of places and in Chumash and the rest of Nach that many times the word Shema doesn't mean to hear, means to understand. Shema Yisrael, for example, literally, even though we always translate hear, O Israel, really it means understand Yisrael. So the same thing, Shema Mina means you can understand from what we just said that is in fact the case. Okay, so the Gemara says, Tanya, Amar Rav Chanina ben Akadia, Loi kach ha-shiven Rav Gamliel l'chachamim. Now we have later on in the Mishnah where Rav Chanina ben Akavya gives a different context in which the Chachamim asked Rav Gamliel this question and Rabbi Akiva answered. We said that it was in connection with where she got property before she was married and now she's married and now she sold it. As opposed to Rabbi Yehuda had referred it to the case where she got property when she was in Arusa and now sold it during the Erusin. So we learn in a braisa. Amar Rav Chanina ben Akavya, loy kach hashivan Rav Gamliel l'chachamim. That's not what Rav Gamliel answered the chachamim. That's not, the discussion was not in connection, like Rabbi Yehuda says, with the case of an arusa, but rather an asua. Ela kach hashivan. Rather, Rav Gamliel answered them as follows. He said, loy, you can't compare the case of, you can't compare the case. So he's saying that I agree the original discussion was about an arusa, but there he wouldn't need to answer them al chadoshim versus al yeshanim. He would have a much stronger answer if they asked him about arusa, because instead he could tell them loy imamartim minasua. Now how do you compare an arusa to an asua? You buy an arusa she'ein baila zakai loy b'mitziyasa. The husband is not yet entitled to anything that she finds. That kicks in only after the nisuin. Loy b'maisi adeha, he's not entitled to her earnings again only after the nisuin. Loy b'afaras nedareha, he by himself can't veto her nedarim only together with her father when she's an arusa. So he wouldn't have even had to give him. So Rabbi Chanina ben Akavya is saying, Rabbi Yehuda, you're saying that the Chachamim asked Rabbi Gamliel about the case where she's an arusa, and the only answer he could find is, look, you know, why should it even be the din by nesua, and you want to apply it to arusa? He could have given a much better answer. Fine, the din applies by nesua, but by an arusa is a whole different ballgame because he's not yet zakai in many things of hers. So rather, says Rabbi Chanina ben Akavya, Omru loy, so now the discussion continued, that they said, okay, you're right, but Rebbe Mochrolachla Nisis Vachakach, that's so fine, that applies if she sold it before she got married. Nisis Vachakach Mochramahu, what happens if she got married and only then she sold it? Then what would be the din? Now you can't say anymore that he's not Zakai B'mtsiyasa, etc., because he is. So what are you going to say now? Why shouldn't he have the ability to undo the sale? Omrulahu. So he answers them, Afzuma, Cheres Venesenes Akayim. In fact, if she got the property before the Nisuin and she sold it after the Nisuin, then also it's valid. Omrulahu, so now they say, so now they ask, what do you mean? Now already he's Zoche in the woman, and now you can't say before, like before, that he's not Zakabim Tsyaso of Mysiadera, etc., because now as an Asur he is. So now what are you going to say? Omrulahem, now he gives them the answer that he said in the Mishnah, Allah Hadoshim, Unuboshin, Allah Shatim, Atshatim, Megalgulon, Leno, say, Yishon. That we have a hard enough time explaining why if she got property after the Nisuin and sold it after the Nisuin, why should she not be able to freely sell it? And you want to say that if she got property before the Nisuin and sold it after the Nisuin, that she shouldn't be able to, that we can't understand what the logic is even on the original din that you want to derive. So in other words, Rav Chanina ben Akavya is saying that Rabbi Yehuda, you were saying that we're asking him about the case of Erosin, but he's saying that, no, the Rabbi Gamliel would have had no reason to use that Chadoshim and Yishanim answer in connection with that. He would have had a much better answer. Rather, the discussion continued, and eventually, when it came to, when she got property before Nisuin and sold it after Nisuin, that is where Rabbi Gamliel was saying that, if at least we could understand the reason why the Chachamim anyway made the Takana, that he should be able to undo the sale of property which he got after Nisuin, sold after Nisuin, then fine, but we can't even understand that reason, so what are you asking about the other case? Okay. So the Gemara asks, V'hanan t'nan ad kila nisis v'nisis yom gamliel omim mokra v'nos nakayim. What do you mean, though? We said in the Mishnah that if she had property, if she got property before she got married, and then she got married, then Rem Gamliel says if she sells or gives, then it's kayim. So here in the Braisa, he's saying mecheres v'nesenes, which means v'chatzchila she could sell or give and kayim. In the Mishnah, though, he was only saying im mochra v'nosna, if the diavad she did it, then it's kayim. So what is it? Does he allow her to sell it v'chatzchila or v'diavad? Rav Zvid says you're right. Toni mecheres v'nesenes v'kayim. You're right. You have to correct the wording in the Mishnah and say that it means that she could sell even l'chatzchila. Rav Gamliel in the Mishnah doesn't mean that she can only do it b'diavad. He means she can do it even l'chatzchila. Tosfos doesn't like that explanation at all. This is Rashi's Gersa. So before Rashi, there were different Gersois. And Rashi says, this is the Gersa that he prefers. Tosfos says, on the contrary, if you have a Mishnah and a Braisa that contradict each other, the more logical thing to do, we always assume the Mishnayos are more accurate than the Braisas. So what we should be doing is correcting the Braisa to make it match the Mishnah, not the other way around. So rather, Tosfos brings... And Tosfos has some other problems with Rashi's with Rashi's explanation. And so Tosfos says, you're right. What it means is the Gemara is not correcting the Mishnah to match the Braisa, but the other way around. The Gemara is correcting the Braisa to match the Mishnah. Rav Gamliel is not saying she can sell l'chatzchila. He's agreeing that she shouldn't sell l'chatzchila, but he's saying b'dievet, if she did, then it would be valid. And when they ask him why, he says al chadoshim anu borshim. Then Tosfos brings something else from Rabbi Hananel, that the point is we don't want Rav Gamliel to be a point of Ishamai, because after all we know the halacha is like this hill also, so we could actually use Rashi's Dirsa.
It means that she actually sold it now after she is.
So now what it means is Rav Gamliel is saying, even in the case where she got property after the chuppah, and now she sold it after the chuppah, we're saying in the Mishnah, everybody agrees that the husband can undo the sale, but Rav Gamliel is saying, I don't even understand why that should be the case. How much more so if she got the property before the Nisuin, before the chuppah, and now she sold it afterwards, you want to say that she shouldn't be able to. I say you can't apply such a din. So again, according to the Mishnah, according to the wording that we have in the Mishnah, it sounds like he's saying only b'dieved should he sell it. The Braisa was saying l'chatzchila. So now we're saying we're correcting one to match the other. According to Rashi, we're correcting the Mishnah to match the Braisa. And according to Tosfos' first explanation, the other way around, we're correcting the Braisa to match the Mishnah. But either way, we're saying that the Rav Gamliel will say that in that case, the sale is valid. Even though she sold it after the chuppah, because she got the property before the chuppah. If she had gotten the property after the chuppah, then and sold it after the chuppah, then that's when Rav Gamliel would agree with all the other chachamim that in fact the husband can undo.
She got it after Edison, but she actually sold it.
But she sold it after Nisuin, right? Okay. Rapapa Amar. Rapapa says you don't have to correct any wording in the Mishnah or in the Braisa. Harav Yehuda, Alibadirang Gamil. Harav Hananim and Akavi, Alibadirang Gamil. Very simple. The Mishnah versus the Braisa are reflecting the opinions of Rabbi Yehuda versus Rabbi Hananim and Gamil. Rabbi Yehuda says that Rabbi Yehuda understood Rabbi Gamliel to say that even if she sold the property as an arusa, she shouldn't do it l'hatchila. So therefore, Rabbi Gamliel is going to say for sure after nisuin she shouldn't do it l'hatchila. So in other words, Rashi says even though in the Mishnah Rabbi Hanina ben Akavya is talking only in the case where she sold after the nisuin, in fact he would argue with Rabbi Yehuda about what Rabbi Gamliel means in the Reisha in the case of Arusa as well. So the Mishnah goes according to Rabbi Hanina ben Akavya's version, and the Braisa that says that it's only b'diavad would be according to Yehuda's version of Rabbi Gamliel. So the Gemara asks Rav Chanina ben Akavya to Bes Shammai. In that case, then what? It comes out Rav Chanina ben Akavya's opinion is like Bes Shammai. Bes Hillel, after all, said by Erusin that she shouldn't sell the Hatchila, and only the Dievet if she sold is valid. If Rav Chanina ben Akavya is saying that Rav Gamliel holds and that we should hold that if she sells that she could sell the Hatchila during the Erusin, that would come out like Bes Shammai. And the answer is Hokikama. Fine. What Rav Chanina ben Akavya means is Lo Bes Shammai Bes Hillel Al Davazet. This would be one of the examples where we would say that he disagrees whether Bes Shammai and Bes Hillel ever argued about the settlement. So he would say there was no argument. Everybody agreed, like the opinion that's attributed in the Mishnah to Bes Shammai. Rav Chanina ben Akavya would say everybody agreed to that. Only in a different case would there be a machlokes Bes Shammai and Bes Hillel. So the Gemara continues, Rav and Shmuel da Amitavayu. Now Rav and Shmuel both say a different din. No, Ben Shenoflo and Nechasim Adshel and Isarisa, whether she acquired the Nechasim before the Erusin, Ben Shenoflo and Nechasim Mishin Isarisa, or whether she acquired the Nechasim after the Erusin, the Nisis, and now she got married, then Rav and Shmuel both say, Habal Motzi, Miyad Lekuchas. The husband would have every right to take the property away from the Lekuchas, because now that he married her, then he has rights over this property. So even though she acquired the property even before the Erusin, or she acquired it during the Erusin, as long as she sold it after the marriage, so in other words, when she got married to him, she still owned this property, then Habal Motzi, Miyad Lekuchas. That seems to not be like either of the Tanoim we said. Whether Rashi Tosfos teaches it out, whether we're talking about, we said before the Omru Lafona, the Chachamim were arguing to Rav Gamliel. So whether we follow Rav Yehuda's version or Rav Chanina ben Akavya's version, either way, they seem to be saying that they both agree that if she got the property before the Erusin and now she sold it after the Nisuin, that Michra Kayim, that the sale is valid. So the only argument is if she got the property after the Erusin. So who are Rav and Shmuel following? They're Amiroyim. They can't argue with Tanoim. The answer is, the answer is that they're following the opinion, another opinion of Tanoim, of Rabbi Sein. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, Rabbi Seinu Chozer Beninu, Rabbi Seinu, which means another group of Chachamim, voted together, and they decided, Ben Shenafol Adshlet Sarasa, or Ben Shenafol Mishne Sarasa, whether she acquired the property before the Erusin, whether after the Erusin, the Nisus, and now she got married, Abal Motzi, the Abel Lekuchas, that the husband can take it away from the Lekuchas, so they're following that. So in that, what? So therefore, so if she sells it after the Nisuin, she sells it after the Nisuin, then the husband can undo the sale. So the 12 points out. So why didn't Rav and Shmuel just say the halacha is like Rabbi Seinu? And so he says, because this braisa was not well known to the Chachamim. So if we said the halacha is like Rabbi Seinu, nobody would have any idea what they're talking about. So therefore, they said it as if like an independent statement, and then we find the braisa that supports what they're saying. Okay, we said in the Mishnah, Nisus Elo Ve'elu Moedim. We said that if she got property after she got married and sold it while she's still married, then everybody agrees that the husband can take it away. So the Gemara says, Lema tenen l'takana skusha. Does that mean that in our Mishnah, we've learned of something that they made in Usha? We learned earlier in our Masechta, and Daf Mem Tes Nun, that there was a period of time when the Sanhedrin was headquartered in Usha, and in the north of Eretz Yisrael, in the Galil, and then they made a number of takonas. One of them was this, the Omer of Yosef of Chanina, Usha Hiskinu, that they made a takona in Usha. Ha'isha p'shamachra b'nichsim alug b'chayibayla. If a woman sold nichsim alug while her husband was alive, umesa, Hadassah and she died, Habal Motzi Miyad Alakuchas. Then the husband can take away that property from the buyers. So it sounds like our Mishnah is saying exactly the same thing, in which case, why do they need to make that Takana in Usha? Now, the interesting point, by the way, is Usha was a couple of generations before Rabbi Yehuda Hanas. In Rabbi Yehuda, the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah lists 10 places where the Sanhedrin went into Galus, and you have Usha, and only after that you have Shvarim and Beis Shorim and Sipori and whatever, and that's and then Beis Shorim and Sipori were where it was in Rebbe's times. So what's the problem? Rebbe composed the Mishnayos, so therefore, so let him include Takanas Usha. What's the problem? The answer is we find many historians and many writers say that we find many cases where we see that the core of the Mishnah existed long before Rebbe. We'll have details in it, the machloikas of Rebbe Gamliel and Rebbe Yehuda and Rebbe Chanan and Akavia and so forth came in only later, but the underlying din in the Mishnah existed and was composed, Baal Peh, and was learned Baal Peh long before Rebbe. So therefore, so now the Gemara is saying that Yisoida Mishnah, as they call it, this core of the Mishnah, existed long before Takanas Usha. So why would the Chacham and Usha have to make the Takana if it was already a known din? And the answer is, Masnissin b'chayeha ol peiros, because our Mishnah is talking only while she's alive. So in other words, she got the property after she got married. She sold it still while she's married. She's still alive. The husband would have the right to take it away from the Lekuchas because he's entitled to peiros. But after she dies, he would still have to return the karka to the buyer. He wouldn't yaushin it from her. So the Takonas Usha was Takonas Usha b'gufa shel karka la'achamisa. Takonas Usha is that he's entitled to take away even the goof of the karka because he yaushins it, and it would be after she dies. So in other words, so the Chachamim added a new point that this nichsim belug that the husband actually yaushins. That we didn't have before. So before Takonas Usha, if she had sold the property and then she died, the husband wouldn't have any more rights over it because there's no more payers. She's dead. And the goof of the karka never belonged to him in the first place. Takonas Usha was that he actually inherits the goof of the karka.
Why didn't the goof belong to him? If she got it after.
She got it after the marriage, but it's only nichsim alug. So therefore, by definition, nichsim alug, the actual asset doesn't belong to him in the first place, only the payers.
So
if she has children, eventually it would go to them. Yeah, right. I mean, if she dies during his lifetime, the Gemara discusses Baba Basra, a husband inherits from his wife. But in this case, she already sold the property. So therefore, the husband wouldn't have the right to yashin it until Takonas Usha, where we consider him like he had a partial owner, because he had a partial ownership beforehand. The Gemara elsewhere calls it Kinyan Peiros, Kinyan Aguf. Once a person has the right to Peiros from a certain asset, to a certain extent, he owns the Guf. And the Takonas Usha is based on that he has the right to the goof to actually take it away from the buyers after she dies.
It's all the kind of because in case she gets captured.
That's something to know. The payless is more in case she gets captured. You were talking about the goof of the character because he was entitled to payless, therefore now they made it that now he has a certain ownership over the goof to the extent that he can take it away from buyers after she dies. Okay, we said Rav Shimon Cholik ben Nechassim. We said Rav Shimon draws a distinction whether the Nechassim were known ahead of time or not. So we say, Elohen you're doing, but Elohen she'en you're doing. What do we mean known versus unknown? So Amr Rav Yosef ben Chanina, you're doing makalki. The word you're doing means karka. Because karka you have to know about, so therefore you can't hide karka. So therefore necessarily he must have had that in mind when he married her. So he was expecting that eventually she's going to yaushin this property, and therefore Rav Shimon says, therefore she doesn't have the right to sell it without his permission. Sha'in you're doing metalplin, as opposed to unknown would be metalplin because metalplin you can easily hide. So he doesn't even know, he doesn't even have a reason, he doesn't even have a smichas das that she's going to inherit in the first place. But Rabbi Yechanan on the Eilav Eilav Yiduin hand, Rabbi Yechanan says no, whether they're karka or metalplin, they can both be called Yiduin. The Eilav Hein Sha'in Yiduin, what is the definition of Sha'in Yiduin? Koshi Yeshevis Kan, Benaflon Nechasim and Linesayah. If she's living in one place and the Nechasim are the Nechasim, she inherits Nechasim in Medinas Hayam in a different place that the husband may not have even known that she's in line for Yerusha there. And the Gemara says, Tanya Nami Hafi, in fact, we learn a braisa like that. Elohen Shein Yiduin, Kol Shia Shevis Kan, Menachlon Nechasim in Medinas Hayam. So that would be what Rav Shimon considers nechasim she'ein yiduin, and we're saying that if she sells it, then the husband has, then the husband doesn't have any rights to undo it because he didn't know about it even the hatchila. So again, it can't factor it into any calculations of his about what she's going to own and what he's going to consider that he has to do for her because he didn't even know this property exists or that she's in line to Yerushalayim. Okay. Hold on.